Merry Christmas, friends, and welcome to Chronicles. Today we're going to be talking all about Letters from Father Christmas by J.R.R. Tolkien. Because you've all been such wonderful fans of the show, you've been so well behaved in the comments section this year, and so I thought that giving you some Tolkien would be a very genuine Christmas present from myself to you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. Now, the letters from Father Christmas are a really, really beautiful book. It couldn't strictly be called a novel, nor could it really be called a novel by letters, even though that's what they are. Really, what you have here with Letters from Father Christmas is private letters written by Tolkien, posing as Father Christmas, to his four children, to John, Michael, Christopher, and the youngest, Priscilla, over the space of about 23 years. Now, these are very, very sweet, and I actually think as well there is something in there for both children and adults as well. It's a really, really beautiful book. It's graced with some of Tolkien's drawings as well, because as well as being master of languages and having one of the great imaginations, Tolkien was also a wonderful drawer. And so when you actually look at the images from these letters as they came in the envelopes and with the drawings inside, these are absolutely spectacular. But even if it isn't in a technical sense an epistolary novel, it does still have a through line. There is a great deal of continuity in it, and very much you can tell in the way that Tolkien is writing it, much as he did with Middle-earth as well. Middle-earth, like the land of the North Pole, as we'll see here, is actually something that already exists, and Tolkien is not in the business of creating a new world so much as he is discovering a new world, as if the thing were real in and of itself and it's already here waiting to be discovered, particularly, of course, by his four children. Though we'll get into the analysis of it all after we've spoken about it. I will just say as well, actually, before we begin, that this particular text you'll see here says edited by Bailey Tolkien. Now, Bailey was the second wife of, I do believe she's still alive, in fact, the second wife of the late, wonderful Christopher Tolkien, who, of course, was an exemplary son and a true steward of all of his father's works, having a lot of Tolkien's writings on Middle-earth that he couldn't get published in his own time, eventually finding their way to the publishers so that we could enjoy such things as The Silmarillion, Children of Hurin, and other wonderful tales. Rovarandom is another example. And so, yeah, absolutely wonderful stuff. But these letters were thought lost and discovered in a drawer in very, very good condition a few years after Tolkien passed away back in 73. And so we're graced with them now, and I would encourage you to make them a staple of your own Christmas, and I will go through the plot. I've employed a lot of extracts from the text itself on this particular occasion, and so let us hear some wonderful Christmassy words from Father Christmas himself. In Father Christmas' first letter to Tolkien's eldest son, John, who was just 3 years old at the time of this writing, we're treated to a simple but enchanted introduction to our great hero. Dear John, I heard you ask Daddy what I was like and where I lived. I have drawn me and my house for you. Take care of the picture. I am just off now for Oxford with my bundle of toys, some for you. Hope I shall arrive in time. The snow is very thick at the North Pole tonight. Your loving Father Christmas. A few years on, John receives another letter from Father Christmas, and this time we see Tolkien fleshing out his characterization with Father Christmas's staple signature shaky handwriting. My dear John, it is very cold today, and my hand is very shaky. I am 1924, no, 7 years old on Christmas Day. Lots older than your great-grandfather. So I can't stop the pen wobbling, but I hear that you are getting so good at reading that I expect you will be able to read my letter. I send you lots of love, and lots for Michael too, and lots bricks too, which are called that because there are lots more for you to have next year, if you let me know in good time. I think they are prettier, and stronger, and tidier than pick bricks, so I hope you will like them. Now I must go. It is a lovely fine night, and I have got hundreds of miles to go before morning. There is such a lot to do. A cold kiss from Father Nicholas Christmas. John's letter from 1924 is brief, as Father Christmas is making ready for his great odyssey through the sky. But it is significant because it is now not just his words in the letter. In great, thick, unjoined letters, we are introduced to Father Christmas's most important helper, the great polar bear.
Father Christmas was in a great hurry, told me to put in one of his magic wishing crackers. As you pull, wish and see if it doesn't come true. Excuse thick writing, I have a fat paw. I help Father Christmas with his packing. I live with him. I am the great polar bear.
Michael receives his first personal letter from Father Christmas in the same year, and tucked into it is some magic wishing crackers, so that he may get the presents he hopes for next year. 1925 is an exceedingly busy year for Father Christmas and his friends. This latest letter is addressed from Cliff House, top of the world, near the North Pole, Christmas 1925. Detailed within is the first great flare of Tolkien's creativity, forging Father Christmas's time up in the north into an ongoing narrative.
My dear boys, I am dreadfully busy this year. It makes my hand more shaky than ever when I think of it, and not very rich. In fact, awful things have been happening, and some of the presents have got spoiled, and I haven't got North Polar Bear to help me. And I have had to move house just before Christmas, so you can imagine what a state everything is in. And you will see why I have a new address, and why I can only write one letter between you both. It all happened like this. One very windy day last November, my hood blew off and went and stuck on the top of the North Pole. I told him not to, but the North Polar Bear climbed up to the thin top to get it down. And he did. The pole broke in the middle and fell on the roof of my house. And the North Polar Bear fell through the hole it made into the dining room with my hood over his nose. And all the snow fell off the roof into the house and melted and put out all the fires and ran down into the cellars where I was collecting this year's presents. And the North Polar Bear's leg got broken. He is well again now. But I was so cross with him that he says he won't try to help me again. I expect his temper is hurt and will be mended by next Christmas. I send you a picture of the accident and of my new house on the cliffs above the North Pole, with beautiful cellars in the cliffs. If John can't read my old shaky writing, 1,925 years old, he must get his father to. When is Michael going to learn to read and write his own letters to me? Lots of love to you both and Christopher, whose name is rather like mine. That's all. Goodbye. Father Christmas. Extracts from the year of 1926 evidence a year of particular havoc, as a North Polar Bear, in his infinite curiosity, turned on the Rory Borealis fireworks. Recounting the chaos to Tolkien's sons, Father Christmas reflects, "It was the biggest bang in the world, and the most monstrous firework there ever has been. It turned the North Pole black, and shook all the stars out of place, broke the moon into four, and the man in it fell into my back garden. He ate quite a lot of my Christmas chocolates before he said he felt better, and climbed back to mend it and get the stars tidy." Imagine 2 years' worth of northern lights thrust into the Arctic firmament. Such glorious splendour. Writing in his own defence, the North Polar Bear merely says, "It was a lovely firework."
In 1927, Father Christmas wistfully reflects on the fact that John did not write to him this year. But otherwise, things are well at the North Pole. Polar Bear and the Snowman have been enjoying a snowball fight, and Father Christmas was recently visited by the Man in the Moon, who, naturally, gets quite lonely up there. The two friends tucked into some splendid plum pudding. It is a time of mirth, and things continue in this way for several years. After the North Polar Bear has been pen-palling for some years, he shares some of his culture with the Tolkien children. He explains that the reason why his letters are always laced with spelling mistakes is because English is not his first language, giving Tolkien an opportunity to, of course, infuse his own love of languages into his world-building.
"Father Christmas says, 'My English spelling is not good. I can't help it. We don't speak English up here, only Arctic, which you don't know. We also make our letters different. I have made mine like Arctic letters for you to see. We always write a vertical arrow for T and V for U. This is some Arctic language, which means goodbye till I see you next, and I hope it will be soon. Mara Mester, ani vera teento, yaratonea." "My real name is Kara, but I don't tell most people."
Hints are dropped across several letters that the children will be gifted the presents they've wished for and been so good to deserve over the years. Paints, model train sets, teddy bears. What's more, Father Christmas informs the children that the polar bear's nephews are visiting during the winter of 1931. Their names are Paksu and Valkatuka. Youthful cubs, which appear to bring added stress to Father Christmas's labours. Ink in the fire and presents in their bellies. They certainly take after their uncle. Grimmer tidings reach the children on November the 30th, 1932. Polar Bear has gone missing. An explanation arrives from Father Christmas several weeks later. Goblins. Father Christmas is visited by old Mr. Cave Brown Cave, one of the last few cave bears that dwell in the Arctic. The ancient, noble beast leads Father Christmas to a series of tunnels that Polar Bear had fallen into. These tunnels are inhabited by goblins, and Father Christmas recounts a lore of their race to the children.
"Goblins are to us very much as rats are to you, only worse, because they are very clever, and only better because they are, in these parts, very few. Long ago we had great trouble with them. That was about 1453, and we got the help of the gnomes, who were their greatest enemies, and cleared them out. Anyway, there was poor old Polar Bear, lost in the dark all among them, and all alone, until he met Mr. Cave Brown Cave, who lives there."
The goblins skulk off deeper into the earth at Father Christmas's approach, and Polar Bear is saved, malnourished, but otherwise grateful for being rescued. The walls also bear crude paintings of long-existent animals, such as mammoths and dragons. Just as dragons covet hoarded gold, goblins apparently love mechanical toys. So when Father Christmas returns with Polar Bear to their home, they are aghast to see that all the Hornby train sets have been pillaged from their stores. But the day is not lost, and Father Christmas calls upon his old alliance with the Red Gnomes of Norway. After Polar Bear smokes the goblins out of their hole, the gnomes pursue them. With so many problems to overcome, there is a terrible rush to be ready for Christmas Day. But with the assistance from the gnome ladies, things get back on track, and Christmas of 1932 is saved.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.